When I was a young boy, I used to have a fantastic English teacher who taught me a huge amount about how to write and how to speak and how to tell stories. I was used to go to his literature class. He teaches Shakespeare. He teaches writing skills. He teaches about persuasion, advertising, propaganda. He was an excellent teacher. And I was not even the best student. You know, I used to have a girl I used to sit beside and I'd get distracted by talking to her and playing around with her. And he'd always give out to me about this. But he gave me an awful lot of leeway. He never kicked me out of class, for example. He knew that I had an interest in the ability to use the word. A natural Irish poet, you know, this type of thing was inside of me. So he always cultivated that. Now, when the time came for me to leave high school, as you Americans call it, it was up to me to decide what I was going to do in college. And because this fantastic teacher had sparked my interest in the art of language and the art of writing and the art of literature and storytelling, I chose English literature. I chose the humanities, the liberal arts, if you will. I did music, I did history, things around this as well. But English literature was the main major that I was aiming at. Now, when I got to university, I noticed a distinct change in the quality of the education. Now, at the time, I didn't quite understand what I was noticing, but I was feeling that the university stuff was more complicated, but not necessarily more informative or more empowering. The high school teacher that I had was able to take stuff like Shakespeare, which is not easy stuff, and digest it down and make it very clear, very easy for a little grug like myself to understand, a little Irish country boy like myself to digest. He was very good in making things simple, elegant, and clear, but nonetheless very profound. He was able to introduce me to big ideas without making them complicated. Now, when I got to university, the experience was much different. I was getting sat down with many theorists. I was presented with this idea that all of literature, like Shakespeare and the Western canon and all these things that we were supposed to read, is something that we must sit down and learn how to critique. This is known as critical theory. I'm sure you've heard about it before. We must sit down and we must critique the Western canon and display our critical thinking skills and read philosophers like Derrida so that we can deconstruct the Western canon and detect inside of it the mistakes that it has made in order to create the problems in our current culture. Now, I ended up rejecting these teachings very, very strongly. I found no teachers that I respected or loved. I found none of them were able to articulate things in a down-to-earth manner like my previous English teacher had. I became jaded. Now, later in my life, I would come to understand that this was actually an egregious political project. This was the postmodern neo-Marxist, as Jordan Peterson said, or the Frankfurt School, who were trying to subvert Western culture in the universities and whatnot, or Gramsci's slow march through the institutions. The woke, communist, critical race theory overthrowers of the Western civilization operating in the universities. I came to learn all this stuff, but I want to stress that my initial rejection of this type of information was not on the grounds of what it was trying to teach specifically. It was the style of teaching. You see, I was a young man and I was insecure and I was holstering inside of myself a feeling of not being good enough. I didn't think that I had the skills to be like the heroes that I looked up to. I would look up to Conor McGregor, I would look up to singers like Jeff Buckley and stuff like this. I would look up to great speakers and great articulators. I would look at writers like James Joyce. I would look at people who made movies like Fight Club and stuff like this. And I would admire all that stuff. And I would see how compelling and interesting these people are. And I would want to become like these people. I would want to develop the capacities that they had so I could become something like them. So I could look at myself as a hero. I could look at myself with respect. I could gain status and then all the girls would love me and all the boys would think I'm cool. And I knew inside of myself that I had the potential to transform into something like this. I knew I had a unique potential, the natural Irish poet within me, that I could manifest as a hero of sorts, my hero's journey, if you want to take Joseph Campbell's ideas. I knew that that path was out in front of me. But when I went to college, I could immediately feel that that was not being cultivated inside me. It's really important to understand this. When I went to college, I felt that that story, that potential was not going to get fulfilled. Now, I loved my English teacher in high school because I could feel him cultivating that potential. I couldn't articulate what was happening. I didn't understand back then, but I could feel very intuitively that this was the right thing to do. It was sparking my imagination. Every class I would go into, I would learn something. I felt more empowered by doing English, by doing literature. I became more perceptive. I became more intelligent. I could feel my natural aptitude for imagination and storytelling getting cultivated and turned into an actual skill. I was learning something, and that was exciting and got me really engaged. When I went to college, I never felt that feeling. It was very, very difficult to find anything at all that felt like it was making me more powerful. Instead, when I went to college, I did not feel like I was having something inside me cultivated and released and purified. Instead, I felt like I was getting weighed down and haggard by abstractions. I would go in and they would bring up Marxism and talk to me about Karl Marx's communist theory and his criticism of capitalism. And we would look through The Merchant of Venice, and we would look and analyze about how capitalism is affecting the morality of all these people. And there was this weight, this ideological weight being put on everything. Of course, I couldn't understand this, but I felt this boredom, this nonsense, this overcomplexity, this vagueness present in that experience. And it really came to a fore one day when I was sitting in a Judith Butler lecture. Now, you see, Judith Butler is one of the theorists that lays the foundation for an awful lot of the gender theory that we see so prominent in the world today. She comes up with this magic piece of jargon, this conception called heteronormative, which I'm sure you've heard before. And this is a cisgender type idea. And there's this heteronormative way that we act, and this is programmed into us by culture, you know. So the Western canon and Western consciousness programs us to be a man or a woman based on all these variety of cultural things that flow into this stuff. And we should learn to critique this so that we can think of alternate ways that we can create our genders and create our identities and, you know, live in the postmodern world and whatnot. And I remember I was sitting through a lecture of this, you know, earnestly trying to find what I was missing, thinking that, am I stupid, or is there something wrong with me, or maybe all the potential unlocking powers will come next year or something like that, so in a little bit of time. But I was sitting through this, and I remember just in that lecture I had this big, deep, moving feeling when they started talking about how men are a problem. I remember this, and they're talking about the problems of masculinity and the damage and wreck that masculinity caused, and they were talking about how the Western canon is this phallogocentric male thing that's damaging people and all this. And again, I didn't follow the intellectual side of this stuff. I just had this deep intuitive rejection. I said to myself, this is nonsense. This is a waste of time. And it was very specific. It was like, I'm sitting here and it's like somebody's whining at me, haggarding at me, gnawing at my ear, telling me all this nonsense, trying to, you know, fill my head full of crap. And I'm not getting better. It's like if I was going to the gym to get stronger and I went to the best gym in the whole city and I was paying loads of money to do it. And instead of them taking me to lift weights, they had me in a classroom teaching me all this lecturing stuff. And I was like, I'm not going to get stronger learning theory. You know, the theory's not going to help here. And your theory kind of sounds like you've spent too much time on theory. You've turned into a theory cell, an abstract dork, a jargonite, as I call them. And so at that moment, I remember in myself, I made a decision. So I said in that moment that I can't rely on this. So fuck the system, you know, I'm out of this, I'm done, this plan is not working for me, and bless me, somebody was looking down upon me, God had a plan for me, I'm sure, because that was the best choice probably of my life. I decided to not go along with that plan. Later I learned how egregious the brainwashing was, how serious it was, but I didn't understand any of that on an abstract or intellectual level, on a world modeling level. I was making a very intuitive choice. I did not want to become a theory cell. I did not want to become a dork. They were transforming me into a dork. And most importantly, my potential was getting squashed. And I felt this big emotion inside of me, or this big idea popped into my head. And it basically said that I need skills, not information. Information is not going to save me. I need skills. I need operations, not information. And so I said I was going to drop out of university. Now, I didn't do it initially, but I basically all but dropped out in spirit. And what I did first is I stopped going to lectures. I started to become a truant. And I started to go to the library instead. So every day when everybody go to their lectures, I just trek onto the library instead of going and listening to all these Marxists trying to brainwash me into hating myself and whatnot. And I went to the library. And I did this because I remember they were always banging on about this Western canon. The Western canon, phallogocentric, male, Christian, European, white, colonial. And I was saying to myself, what is this Western canon that they're bickering about? I knew Shakespeare, so I kind of thought it was like, I don't know, is it Shakespeare or something like this? But what is this Western canon? And I read up about it and I was sort of like, it's this combination of philosophy and the scholastics and literature and all this. There's this kind of big bulk of writers and thinkers that make up this Western and kind of thing. So I was like, you know what, I'll go read that thing. And so I went into the university college and I sat down and I went to the ancient Greeks and I picked up Heraclitus and I picked up Plato and I picked up the pre-Socratics like Parmenides, and I understood none of that stuff. But I picked up all these things and I began to read them. I began to read these because I was like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read the Western canon. The Western canon basically is starting with ancient Greek philosophy, moving upwards into, you know, true Christianity, up towards modern philosophy like Nietzsche and all this type of stuff. And I knew Nietzsche as well because Nietzsche is, you know, super famous and all this stuff. And I was sort of like, I'd also like to understand Nietzsche, and I think reading a bit about philosophy would be quite handy and all this stuff. So I began reading Plato. And I began reading Heraclitus. And immediately I was struck by how clear these guys spoke. Plato reads like a children's book. It's so elegant and straightforward. And he's talking about pretty monumental ideas. He's talking about some of the biggest ideas in the world. People say, you know, philosophy is the footnotes to Plato for a reason. It's not like his ideas are small. But the way he communicates is very clear and simple, because the strength of the ideas is so powerful, it doesn't need to be complicated. And that alone hit me like a slap in the face, because I started to realize that these jargonites in the university were making everything so complicated to me, getting in the way of my ability to understand myself. So I was reading Plato, and it was all simple and clear and elegant and fantastic. And I was working my way up, reading through philosophy, reading through literature and all these type of things, learning a hell of a lot of stuff now by just doing my own reading. And it was around about that time that I made a decision, a permanent decision, that if I'm going to fulfill my potential, I can't just be a reader, a guy who knows books and stuff like this. I need something more. So that's when I completely dropped out. So what I did is I set up my own educational plan. I had my $40, $50 a month that I could spend on teachers and stuff like this. And so I would find ways that I could do some self-education. And I went around and I found poets, I found sales guys, I found an opera singer, I found a jazz singer, I found a jazz musician who ran a band and stuff like this. I found public speakers, I found comedians. I went to Muay Thai gyms, I went to boxing gyms and all this type of stuff. And I would take whatever cash that I had that I could afford. I slept on a mattress in the house, and I sort of set up a boyo education plan, if you want to put it this way. And my only principle was that everything I was going to do was going to be skill-based. If I needed any information, I would read it myself. I was like reading through the Western canon and stuff like this, and I'd figure it out my own way. Books are very, very cheap, so it wasn't that big of a deal. And I didn't need anybody to, like, the theory wasn't going to help me too much, and I just kind of keep this supplemental stuff in the background. And I had this procedural attitude that I was very heavily focused on. This is my big thing, is I was looking for operations, procedures, and skills. And of course, it was during this period that I felt reinvigorated once again. I felt all those feelings, this intuitive sense of, was I on my path towards my potential, getting switched on once again. I became naturally interested in things. I was excited to go to the gym and learn to kick people in the legs. I became excited to go to my music classes and have a teacher teach me how to sing and how to construct musical harmonies and whatnot. I was excited to go to a speaker, a public speaker or a comedian, and have them teach me, or the poet, and have them teach me the ins and outs of how language works and how to use it in order to enact meaning. I was excited to go and participate in these things, to talk to lawyers or salesmen or public speakers about rhetoric and how to persuade people and how to move people's imaginations and the procedures involved with this stuff. Now, I often ask myself, how could I have done this optimally? Because the way I did it was very sloppy. I'd show up to the music teacher one week and then Muay Thai gym the next, and all these types of things. It was quite uncontrolled and impulsive and sporadic. But what could I have done to make it structured, to make it most effective and stack the information on top of it and set up a curriculum for myself? Because this is something that the education system is supposed to provide you, a roadmap towards fulfilling your potential, to gaining the skills you need to gain. And of course, my curriculum was going to be Marxism and Judah Butler and a deeper education in ideology. So me breaking out of this meant that I had no curriculum. It had to be a self-run curriculum. And that was a great pain for me. I remember I felt huge emotional issues because of that. I was very depressed, very jaded with the world, very angry, because I was this active force. You know, I was a young boy, a young lion, and I had loads of energy and I just wanted to work. You could have sat me down there and just told me to go, just said go and run in a direction, and I would have ran if I thought it was going to take me the place I needed to take. And instead of me being able to spend that creative young energy on developing myself, I had to go and spend that energy on figuring out for myself a structure to my learning and whatnot. And that kind of felt like a waste of time. That's like something I'd rather my coach have to handle or my educational institution have to handle and all these types of things. And there was nobody who was really a coach for whatever I was trying to become. That I didn't have that the realm of this ideal of like a modern, competent, rhetorical speaker or something like this. It just wasn't really there. And this became a big point of issue for me. I really felt that my society failed me, my culture failed me. And this wasn't abstract or intellectualized. It was just an emotional, intuitive thing. I really felt jaded as a consequence of this. So I often ask myself, how would I have structured this well? What would I have done? Now, I've since realized that this is quite a timely question. An awful lot of us are dropping out of college because we're realizing that it's a scam. It's a bad deal. It overpromises and overcharges and underdelivers in every realm. It's not even economically viable. It doesn't make you adaptable to the modern creator economy, never mind the fact that it tries to pump your head full of ideology. It's just simply not doing any job at all. It leaves you useless when you come out of it. The only advantage really going is that it gives you powerful connections and allows you to get into important institutional jobs, like, for example, government, politics, law, the military, stuff like this. And if you're aspiring to go in that direction or become a doctor or something like that, of course it makes sense. They're very important and high status jobs. But if you're looking to get involved in the creative arts or the creator economy and stuff like this, or entrepreneurialism, I just don't see any virtue in the education system at all. It seems completely pointless and useless. So many of us are sitting here asking ourselves, right, we can't go to college, but we have to get better. We're trying to adapt. This is what people do. This is what humanity does, you know? We have to adapt to quickly changing times. There's a massive shift in the economy happening and the world happening right now. And we need to learn how we can adapt to this. And learning is the key part of it. The key coefficient here is your ability to learn the skills that will allow you to thrive in this new environment. So what I want to talk to you about is a plan, a vision on how you should educate yourself in the modern world. Now, this project starts by you having a vision about what you need to become, an ideal inside of your head. So for example, if you went into a boxing gym, you would have an image inside of your head of Muhammad Ali or Floyd Mayweather, and he would be an image of success. You're trying to educate yourself in some sense in the model of what he's doing. That's a vision of competence that you're seeking after. So our question is, what is the vision of competence in our world? What do we need to develop inside of ourselves? What is the heroes that we're looking to transform into? And that's a very, very big question. Now, this question of getting the vision right is an awful lot more complicated than you think. And it's an extremely big deal because when you have a goal, it allows you to sacrifice, choose which things that you're going to pay attention to. The problem I had is my goal was somewhat vague when I look back. But if I had this clear goal that I wanted to be an MMA fighter, I would have dropped probably the musical training and would have went all in on the MMA stuff. You can see how this starts to very quickly make sense because you only have so much energy and you're going to have to invest it in a certain path. And so the goal predicates how you prioritize. And this in some sense is what you're learning. Now, this is a very hard question because what should the goal be in the modern world? The ancient Greeks set up an educational system designed to take their aristocratic sons and transform them into supermen who could rule over the plebs and rule over other tribes. And so the vision they had of what they wanted to develop inside of people was quite clear. They wanted their sons to be musically talented, sophisticated, literate, educated. They want to understand Greek culture. They also want to be capable of war. They want to be physically healthy. And so their education system had music involved in it. It had public speaking skills so they could participate in politics. And it had wrestling and athletics and war and training of military strategy. So they could create a sort of holistic guy, a guy who was physically strong and capable and healthy, a guy who could speak in the public forum and present himself, a guy who had musical education and literate education, that's basically what literature was back then, and then a guy who had this ability to sit down and think about war and think about the concepts of how to run a war well. And this is the true education of a master, an aristocrat, a highborn person, somebody who's concerned with war, with culture, with speaking, and with health. Do you see how clear this vision they had is? Do you understand the importance of education for them? The slaves were not educated. The slaves would learn nothing about military power. They would not be able to speak. They would not understand culture. They were useless plebs with no consciousness whatsoever. They were kept out of the realm of higher order, because education is power. Education is your ability to assert yourself and become a king and to rule. Education is your ability to enact violence upon other people and set boundaries and assert dominance. The slaves could not participate in the gyms. The slaves would not be able to get into shape. The slaves were kept weak and the masters were kept strong. And they had a very clear vision of this that allowed them to create a pedagogy that suited that. They built their educational system on that goal. Now, what about our modern education? What are the predicates and the vision of the person that we want to create at the root of our modern education system? Well, of course, our modern education system comes from Prussia. When the Prussians, the North Germans, they were dealing with the problem of rapidly having to industrialize their population. So what they had is they have a load of farmers in their big country, and they have these huge cities growing up, and there's not enough people inside these cities to work in these factories in the 19th century. And so what they need to do is quickly take a load of people who are used to getting up at like 7 a.m. and milking cows and bring them into these cities ready to start pulling levers in a factory and take orders and reading documents and reading procedures. That's a very, very hard thing to do quickly. So what the Prussians come up with is the Prussian model of education. The Prussian model of education is designed to take a mass population, a huge democratic population, huge amounts of people, and quickly put them through a factory operation in order to educate them to be good factory workers. This is the goal of this. And it was very suitable and very intelligent for the time. They quickly allowed themselves to industrialize as a consequence of this. And this is why the modern education system looks so much like a 19th century factory operation. What do I mean by that? Well, obviously, you've probably heard this before. What about the bell? You know, why does the bell ring and all this? Well, that's what they used to do in factories. Why is it 9 to 5? Well, that was the factory working hours. Why is it 5 days a week? That was the factory working hours. Why is the experience everybody sitting together in classes that are sort of like a generation? Well, that's how you would take people in and organize them in a simple way. All right, we'd take this batch of people like a factory assembly line, run them through 10 years, educate them in each blob or something like this, and bring them out at the end when they're ready. And why do we all sit down and we take in information and documents? Because we're getting used to having coding and information and documents and all these type of things installed inside of us, so we're able to take orders and able to read instructions and all this type of stuff. This is the type of education that was being put together. And of course, this is the root of the modern educational system, and this is what it's trying to turn you into. This is why when people like Andrew Tate and all them give out stink and say it's the Matrix and they're trying to keep you stupid, in some sense he is correct. They're trying to educate you and turn you into a useful factory worker in the modern educational economy, and that is a little bit demoralizing, because that's not what an awful lot of people want to be. An awful lot of people want to be rock stars and other things like this. I'm afraid the school is not going to do that for you. Now, of course, the modern education system has evolved somewhat, but not that much. It's still essentially a factory designing you into being a good office worker to work on Excel sheets and be an accountant or something like this that they can plug into the modern economy. That's sort of what's going on with this. Now, in light of this, there are two things that we should take note of, and one of them you're going to be well aware of, and that is the fact that the internet is changing things very dramatically. In fact, artificial intelligence now being a part of the internet is pretty much cleaning out, or going to clean out, an awful lot of those more operational jobs, those more factory-like jobs. They're going to be in a precarious situation. So that alone is something that we really need to start to factor in. The internet generally is much more entrepreneurial, much less secure, as you know all these things, but it's important to reiterate them. The internet is this sort of free, wild west, where if you can go up and you're able to grab attention, you are able to actually do very, very well for yourself, and you can sort of jostle your position without having credentials, and you can kind of skip on an awful lot of the stodgy, frozen, rigid institutions, which are actually just full of ideologues right now and all these types of things. So that's a very important thing to understand, is that technology, the internet, AI, these things are throwing a massive spanner in the works. And so our vision of what we need to become has to be an awful lot different. If you want to just, you know, get educated to be that office worker, because that's a sort of safe path for you to go down. All right, fair enough, but things are not going to be as straightforward and safe anymore. Chaos is here and things are going to change massively. And the second is a question of status, power, and vision. Because in the ancient world, as I just told you, the Greeks would educate their sons to be political rhetoricians, would be strong, handsome athletes, would be competent at strategy and war, would be deeply educated in literature and have a comprehensive musical education. In the ancient Catholic world, one of the brilliant innovations of the Catholics was the creation of the sort of universal university system. But the Catholic university system, which means universal university. And what they do here is they create this broad set of universities across Christendom that harvests up these super intellectual, intelligent young people and bring them into this university system and teach them and educate them and perfect their minds. And the goal that an awful lot of these people were taught was very similar to Greek education, although the Christianity has issues with the body, so they wouldn't teach them athletics and stuff like this. They're quite bad for things like this, but nonetheless they were brilliant at other things. And this, for example, was the ability to train them in this universal language of Latin. This is why science uses all these Latin words, to teach them speaking skills, to teach them what we call a true liberal education, an education for a high status man, a man who's an educator who can get brought back into his society and become a public speaker, a leader, an organizer, a city planner, all these types of things. And this educational system that was focused on the excellence of the individual and bringing about the individual's competency in articulating themselves and using their higher faculties and perfecting them, this led to a really powerful culture. In fact, you know the way you see all those trad accounts where they're looking at they look at modern art and they look at modern architecture and stuff like this, and it looks like this blob, this Borg blob that came down from outer space. It's the DMT elf aliens that are telling us to make things this way. And then you look at the ancient Catholic European architecture, like these grand cathedrals that just look like this psychedelic trip of morphing kaleidoscopes of patterns all moving together, united as stone and whatnot. How do these things happen contrasting with this? Well, I guess a part of it would have been the sophistication of the decision makers in society, because the people at the top of society were taught these really high quality skills and they're really well developed people. These people had really, really high amounts of their potential manifest, especially their literate and articulate and thinking skills. Now, this might be my most optimistic take on human development in the modern age, because since the Prussian education system sort of made everybody into drones and office slaves, we had a bit of a problem, because that was the main institution that all of us went through that we were going to get educated by. But as I said, the internet throws a curveball against this, and this gives us the opportunity to be very inventive and very creative. And maybe for the first time in a couple of hundred years, or maybe the first time ever, we're able to bring up this idea of these high-level aristocratic, high-level skills of developing out the highest potential of human faculties and get this vision for who we should be in the modern world, in the next coming century. What type of people do we want to develop? Well, we want to develop people who are really good at higher order skills. For example, the internet requires you to be good at speaking, at thinking clearly, because these things are fundamentally related. Your ability to be a decision maker, your ability to use your brain, basically, in a much more dynamic and advanced way. Your ability to be cultured and have depth and have perspective. All of these virtues and traits lead heavily to your likelihood of success in the internet being much, much, much higher. On top of this, with things like AI coming around, the skills that are going to be most rewarded are not going to be easily replicable operational tasks that AI is just going to chew up, but it will actually be your ability to be a decision maker, to be a big thinker, to be somebody who's able to use your higher faculties, who's refined those things. These are going to be the things that actually matter the most. These are going to be the things that allow you to stay competitive and stand out from all these types of things. And of course, this is going to lead to you being somebody of status and power and importance, because if you're able to speak, if you're able to write, articulate, present ideas, if you're able to think, if you're able to be decisive, if you have these types of attributes built inside of you, you become a very, very compelling person. And on top of this as well, things like physical education are actually going to become more and more important, because you know it's no mistake that we sit down all day. You hear this being said all the time. We go into school and we're hunched over from 9 to 5 in these stupid little chairs. We all develop back problems. We become nose or mouth breathers. Our noses get clogged. We turn into little golems. We become manifest as the last man. This is a very, very big problem that's leading to lots of health issues and leading to people becoming uglier and becoming stupider and easier to control by the matrix and stuff like this. And so as a consequence of this, It's also very important that we start to take responsibility for our health. We start to become educated in our health. We start to learn about these things. We become self-educated so that we can become healthy, because this will lead to more happiness, lead to more creativity, lead to all these good things. So it's important to understand that for the modern era, we are actually getting very, very close to that old Greek ideal of a holistic education. That's actually becoming relevant once again. Now, there was a very high barrier of entry to this before, because you had to be rich, aristocratic, you had to have the institutions built for you to do these types of things. But the internet, being such a fantastic leveler, really opens up the possibilities for this to be available to pretty much people who choose to go in this path. In some sense, it's very much like a liberal opportunity for people. If you have the inclination to take responsibility for your own education, or maybe your children's education, you can absolutely transform your life very quickly by finding good information. Now, what I'm trying to put together here, once again, is a vision for a individuated man, somebody whose potential is filled. And what does this mean? Because this is not something you can pontificate about. This is very, very grounded in procedures. This is about developing out somebody's natural capacities. Everybody has a voice, but not everybody develops that voice to use that voice. It's just like this idea that everybody can sing, but people don't always get the training necessary to develop out their capacity to sing well. Everybody can write, but can they write well? Everybody can think, but are they educated in how to think well? How do they bring out these capacities? To give you an example of this, if you were to become an MMA fighter, everybody can fight, everybody can get in a scrap and wrestle people in the streets and all this type of stuff, but to actually become competent in the art of fighting on hand-to-hand unarmed combat so that you can defeat somebody, you have to have a coach develop out all of those attributes and all those skills to maximize your person. And that's a procedural, skill-based operation in order to achieve this. But the vision of who you'd be at the end of this, a UFC fighter, an MMA fighter, a competent fighter, that's a very clear thing that people understand. People can even look at a good fighter and know that's a guy who knows how to fight, and they can see how much better he is than somebody who's untrained. It's very similar in the realm of speaking, in the realm of literature, in the realm of the mind, in the realm of the mental faculties and mental skills. There are a set of binary standards that people can develop their capacities to. That is something that leads to a type of person emerging who is very competent, who is very skilled, who is very cultured, but not in a way that they are some wanker who has filled their head with theory, but in the fact that they've got attributes, they've got skills, they are able to present themselves, they're persuasive, they've got rhetorical skills, they've got writing skills, they've got thinking skills, they've got decision-making skills. These are the type of people who end up in leadership positions, who end up in successful positions, who end up as influencers, thought leaders and stuff like this. This is the vision that we're talking about here. And to add on top of this, the way that it relates to our cultural problem, our malaise, our existential crisis. There's an awful lot of people who are worried about the age of nihilism that we live in. They're worried about the culture wars that are going on and stuff like this. And they appeal to things like philosophy, and they try to figure out, they try to worldview model what is happening, and they debate about what is the nature of the world. And of course, I think that's an important thing to do, to try stabilize our perspective on things so that we have an accurate perspective. There's nothing wrong with that. But the thing that actually will solve this is when we start getting competent Western people back into positions of leadership so that they can start to change the culture and move the culture back in a positive way. It's that simple. And that's not something we can pontificate about and we can blather about. That's something that will happen operationally. That's something that will happen when we actually start to execute and start to assert ourselves in the world. And think about what this plan of self-education and how it relates to this and how important it is to understand this. Because what is happening in our institutions, in our educational systems? We have, first of all, on its most basic level, a cult of equality that sacrifices excellence. So anybody who participates in them becomes useless. Now, it becomes even worse because they're all ideologues. So they're not only are they useless, but their heads are getting full with nonsense and crap. And then it becomes even worse if you're a Western man, because the ideology that they're plugging into people's heads in these institutions is anti-Western men. It hates the West, and it hates men, and it hates you specifically. I noticed, I could feel this a little bit. I never articulated it until I got out, but there was something in that stuff that I was getting taught in university that was disempowering me specifically. It was not fulfilling my potential in a basic level, but spiritually, it was demoralizing me. It was blaming me for the state of the world. It was doing all these types of things. And what we see now in our culture is this saturation of this way of thinking that's essentially ransacking and destroying our culture, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. And the response to this is an awful lot of young Western guys are jaded, are depressed, are nihilistic. They're good-willed dudes like me. I'm a good guy, and I want to go and build things in the world, and I want to be creative, and I want to make things, and I want to go do fun stuff with science and study psychology and learn how to create art and stuff like this so I can give things and contribute to the world and manifest visions that inspire people and lift the spirit of the world into life-affirming perspectives, as Nietzsche would talk about. But of course, because I'm demoralized, the world misses out on that creative potential. The world is fallen as a consequence of this ideology and this resentful slave resentment that has saturated these institutions pulls all this stuff down. And that's the actual problem. And so all of us Western men dropping out of the plan, dropping out of the game, in all sorts of spheres, not just in the political sphere or in the Jordan Peterson sphere, stuff like this, but there's guys who are dropping out of it and going online and learning how to make money drop shipping. There's guys dropping out of it and going and starting their own businesses and stuff like this. There's guys dropping out of it in all sorts of ways across the board because they don't feel it represents them. Now think about what can happen where these guys get serious about becoming excellent and becoming competent. They don't sit around and become resentful little fucking losers who cry and whine and moan and say, oh, the woke people are coming to get me. That's just loser talk. That's slave talk. That's, you deserve to fail and lose if that's how you think. If you want to be a black-pilled loser complaining on Reddit, go and do it. But that's not going to change the situation. Now think about the vision of a 10,000 people who are creative, who are risk takers, who realize the scam of what's going on, and they drop out, they see the nonsense around them, and they focus like animals on becoming excellent. They become speakers with incredible capacity. They can think, they're decisive, they're great leaders, they're fantastic organizers. They're people that you put them in top of operations and they make the operations work. They've got good value systems and they've got these life-affirming values that Nietzsche talks about. They're highly positive, highly creative, highly motivated, cultured. They understand what is important to do. They hate ideologues. They hate this type of stuff. They hate this nonsense and this negativity and this resentment that is weighing everything down. And they penetrate into every single sphere of life. Agriculture, politics, the military, arts, Hollywood, whatever you want to say, they start to saturate into everything. They create new industries, new paradigms. They go into tech, AI. They invent like internet ecosystems and stuff like this around them. They penetrate everywhere. And there's 10,000, 40,000, 100,000 of guys like us, the smartest and sharpest and the best talent to come out of the West. And they penetrate with these positive skills, fully empowered because they have these skills, and they just dominate all their competition. They're everywhere and they're winning because they're good enough. And everybody else falls by the wayside because what mistake has everybody else made? They've allowed themselves to get seduced by resentful ideologues that have fundamentally made them weak, made them full of bickering and whining and all this type of stuff, basically educated them to be useless slaves. And as a consequence, they get punished by not being able to do anything with their lives. They're victims towards exploitative scammers. And in response to this, you have highly creative, ambitious guys who focus on excellence and making themselves good enough, who come in and just wipe the floor with everybody else and actually get Western culture in a positive direction, running in the right direction, pushing things forward, pushing things on an ascendant path. That's a big deal. There's a plan. There's a goal. And what's interesting is you don't have to buy into anything. I don't have to sell you some like worldview or Weltanschauung or ideology and all this type of stuff. I can just basically tell you that if you're good enough, you get to decide how the world is going to be run. And you can trust your nature and your instincts. You know in your heart, if you believe in life and you believe in the truth and you believe in reality, you know inside of you, if you've got that life-affirming soul inside of you, if that's the case, then your competence is the most important thing for you to manifest. So this leads to us reaching a comprehensive understanding of our situation. We need to outcompete ideologues and we need to win. Now, how exactly do we go about that process? Now, as I've described, it requires us to become obsessed about higher order skills. The capacity to speak, the capacity to write, the capacity to think, the capacity to articulate our thoughts, to use our imagination, to get the most out of our brain. Things like artificial intelligence is going to make quite a lot of the lower level skills somewhat redundant. Social media massively rewards personality, storytelling skills, articulation skills. The leverage points for us to put ourselves in a position of advantage is our ability to adapt to the rapidly changing world quicker than the people who are stuck in institutional ideological incest, or who are just staying with the plans because they can't really dynamically adapt to the situation that is in front of them. We can move fast. We're disorganized, we're decentralized, we don't really know exactly what we're doing, things are a little bit chaotic, but we've got speed, we've got adaption. So the skills we should focus on need to be a little bit higher order as a consequence. Of course, there's many models in the past of how to develop these skills. There's, as I said, the ancient Greeks, the liberal arts of the Catholic University, the Enlightenment philosophers and their educational plans. Nietzsche himself talks about this stuff in many different levels. There's a lot of ways that we can see models to learn these skills. Now, I keep talking about these higher order skills, and I just want you to understand why they're so important, because again, we're living in an era of chaos. Things are changing rapidly. If we are going to educate ourselves, self-educate, and plan out how we develop our own potential, which we're going to have to do because the institutions have failed us, the structures of our society have in some sense turned polarized against us, which is not good. We are going to have to learn how to educate ourselves to be extremely adaptable. So this is like this idea of teach a man to fish versus give a man a fish. Okay, so if you learn about a specific thing like history or geography or whatever it is, these things are okay, and the education system is full of them, and they can become quite useful knowledge from time to time, especially if you get into something, if you become, I don't know, a geographer or something like this. But generally speaking, it's far superior to teach people higher order skills that they can use to apply these things. And what do we mean by this? Well, these are skills about understanding what our brains can do, because our brains are very, very adaptable. So instead of teaching somebody about history, could you teach them about how to read? Could you teach them that procedure and process? This is what these critical theorists in the university system are claiming that they're trying to do, teach you how to critically analyze text, but of course they just fill it full of ideology, so they just ruin the process. But teaching you something like how to read properly, what's the technicalities of good reading, reading quicker, reading information well, how do you switch on your imagination, what does that even mean, how do you switch on your right hemisphere and get it communicating with your left hemisphere, is that a real thing, what does that mean, what type of procedures are there, what type of benefits could that bring you? If you do that, it actually has effects all across all areas of your life, because it's about using your brain better. Getting your brain communicating with the two hemispheres intertwined will make you better at everything from deciding what to eat for lunch, to visualizing your future, to storytelling, to making decisions on the fly, to your own happiness and inner peace. It's that broad in its effects. And these type of skills, you don't see them in the education system, because they're about bringing out mental faculties, decision making, the psychology of persuasion generally. What does that do? As I said, how do you constitute and construct the story? How do you speak well? How do you arrange words well? What's the technicalities of correct use of language? How do you get more visuals inside of your language to make your language more engaging? All of these things are very, very useful higher order skills that are very important to develop. And then if you combine that with a diligent plan for people to study the information that is necessary to develop their understanding of worldview and their world perspectives, you get people who are able to educate themselves very quickly with a very effective set of procedures that are very adaptable, which is very, very powerful. Now, the specifics of this, I would love to talk about today, but it'll kind of go a little bit long if I do that. I'll be ranting about it all the time. So I actually plan to put out loads of videos talking about this. I'd like to talk about some of these ideas, some of the big ideas, some of my big perspectives. An awful lot of this stuff, you can find this stuff looking up, like, you know, if you look up meta learning, you'll find lots of people talk about this. I often talk about the Feynman technique, which is a really interesting technique and a simple one you can use. But I have some very original perspectives on this from all my years of studying Jung and doing many of these experiments myself and studying things like the right hemisphere. So I'm definitely going to put some information out on this. I have an email list where there's a free program with information on these things that you can go and you can check out. You can find procedures in there. You can learn more about what I'm talking about there if you so wish. It's all up there that you can just check out, get a sense straight to you. But nonetheless, my plan in the future is to talk about this stuff more and more and more, because I think with the way that I see the world, I think this is very, very important that we start seeing a culture of excellence forming around us. I think that's the most important thing to happen. I'm kind of sick of all the bitter, resentful fucking losers who are jaded with the world. Yes, I'm jaded with the world as well, but let's do something about it. Let's get professional around here. Let's get sharp, snazzy, and let's become winners instead of bickering little sods. And it's going to come down to skills. And as I said, things like the AI showing up and all this type of stuff, this is going to become a bigger and bigger problem going forward. And then being able to think clearly about what we should be doing is going to be more and more important. So I'll leave it at that. That has been my story of education, my understanding of the meaning, purpose, and value of education, the struggles, my struggle with the education system, and what I think we need to be focusing on if we are to go forward in the future and be juicy boyos who mog the abyss, flex on nihilism, who make nihilism get down on its knees and start whimpering and crying. This is what we're going to have to become. So thank you very much for your time. Stay juicy, and bye-bye.